All opinions expressed by Davidson Capital Management on MoneyWise are solely theirs and are based upon information they consider reliable and is subject to change without notice. You should be aware of the risk in investing in any security or investment strategy discussed on the show. Before acting, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and should seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. Got your MoneyWise guys back inside the MoneyWise studio with me for this weekend show. I have Joe Rust, and I am your host, Kyle Davidson. For any new listeners to the MoneyWise program, Davidson Capital Management is a fee-only registered investment advisor. We're in our 35th year of business, and with offices in San Antonio and Corpus Christi, we have your investment management needs covered throughout Central and South Texas. And if you'd like to learn more about us, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your MoneyWise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. As we kick off every weekend's MoneyWise program, I would typically turn it over to my brother Jeff to go into the numbers from Wall Street from this past week. But since Jeff is off for this weekend's MoneyWise program, I will go into that. So in the week just passed, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 0.1%. The S&P 500 was up 0.9%. And the NASDAQ this past week was up 1.7%. Now for the year to date, Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 3.7%. The S&P 500 is up 7.7%. And the NASDAQ is up year to date 8.4%. So I also wanted to mention that the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ both closed on Friday at new all-time highs. And, wow. You know, Joe, you know, with leap year happening this past week, Friday was the first day of March.
What is February 29th? I'm not used to that. So
that's leap year. That's leap year. But looking at the returns, and we talked about this on last week's show and the week before, you know, we've got the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ just coming out hot out of the blocks again. I mean, just annualize the returns of – let's look at the NASDAQ. If you annualize those returns how we did really through the first two full months of 2024, we're looking at just under a 50% return for the NASDAQ. Now, of course, we would love for that to occur. The odds of that happening, I would say, even in a presidential election year, and the markets are typically positive historically in a presidential election year, I don't think we're going to squeeze out a 50% return in the NASDAQ. What are your thoughts, Joe?
I don't think so. But when you on a Friday, when you have NVIDIA up another 4% with $2 trillion in market cap, and there's a statistic, and I can't exactly remember what it was, but it had something to do with NVIDIA having the market cap of Mexico. I mean,
as a country, as far as their GDP.
Yes, there you go. Take that, Mexico. You know, but anyway.
Well, you know, Apple, I mean, Apple's market cap is larger than, what, 60, 70 different countries as far as their GDP is concerned. Well, you look at a company like Broadcom, which, for disclosure, is a stock that we've owned in the portfolio for many, many years, got a price upgrade on Friday, and it was up, you know, just a small 7.59% for Broadcom, and this is a stock that has almost a $1,400 a share price. So I'd really love to see a split coming in Broadcom, because that would definitely help a lot of other investors be able to participate in this stock. But one thing I do want to touch on, and I know, Joe, you've been paying attention to this, and I know we've talked about digital currencies on the MoneyWise program. Well, we're not fans of digital currency in any way, shape, or form. It's a digital casino, nothing more. And a lot of hoopla has been revolving around this this splitting event that occurs with Bitcoin every few number of years, where basically as the computer algorithm is solving these mathematical problems to be rewarded with Bitcoins, they're rewarded with a smaller number of Bitcoins. So it makes them even more complex and complicated to get your hands on. Again, we've just seen the increase in digital currencies really from the beginning of the year. And of course, in the back of my mind, I'm just waiting for the big institutional players that do play in this field when they're going to just rip the rug out from all of the get-rich-quick schemers and traders out there looking to get wealthy on digital currency, which is basically a digital widget and has no real use unless you're a criminal or sex trafficker or, you know, a kidnapper or human smuggler, human trafficker, drug dealer, money launderer. I'm just amazed at so many of these larger institutions that are getting into it. I guess they're just looking to make a quick buck on the back of the everyday man and woman investor.
Well, as a firm, and full disclosure, we're talking about owning Broadcom. We don't own Bitcoin, and we always talk about this, and every once in a while, we'll still get a client, for a prospective client or just an investor, asking us what we think about that. And the rule of thumb is for us, like, look, no more than 5%. To be honest with you, just no more than 5%. If you're going to have no more than 5%, it's not going to burn you, you know, and just be ready for that. And I think that's the same with when we talk about gold. I remember when gold was, GLD. A long time ago, we had GLD in the portfolio prior to me coming over. But when you're constructing a portfolio, just remember some simple rules that we talk about. And one of them is not owning 5% of any one stock. In some cases, any particular type of investment, I think Bitcoin would be definitively one of those type of investments. So,
well, we're not recommending anyone of any to invest in digital currency in any way, shape, or form. Avoid it like the absolute black plague. But if you want to go against, over 75 years plus of a combined investment management experience at Davidson Capital, you just absolutely have to own it. Like Joe said, no more than 5% of your investable net worth in any one particular individual stock. You can't own more of that in an exchange traded fund or a mutual fund, which are diversified investments to begin with. But, Bitcoin and a lot of the pro Bitcoin people on Wall Street consider it an asset class, even though there's not really any real use for it. Not going to HEB or to the store or to the restaurant to be paying for my dinner with Bitcoin. And I don't see that ever occurring. So if you absolutely have to go against the grain and don't, listen to us now, believe us later kind of thing, no more than 5% of your investable net worth in that. And I'm not even going to call it an asset class, the online casino of digital currency. So sorry I got off on that tangent, but I just, talking about the S&P 500 reaching an all-time new closing high on Friday, same thing with the NASDAQ. This is another big newsmaker so far this year is what's been occurring in digital currency. But again, it's all about marketing. It's all about hype. It's all about bringing in more buyers than sellers. But I have a feeling that the big players in that space, they're just looking for their exit point to leave the regular investor holding the bag as it occurred, several years ago in Bitcoin. Well, with that, let's take our first commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. You Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So if you're just tuning into this weekend's MoneyWise program, just continuing to recap the happenings of Wall Street over this past week. As I mentioned in the last segment, S&P 500 closing on Friday at a new all-time high. Same thing with the NASDAQ. We'd already seen the Dow close at all-time highs earlier this year, but it did actually have a down week with those 30 stocks that make up the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And we did have quite a bit of Fed news this past week. The big piece of news was the PCE or personal consumption expenditure, which came out on Wednesday, if memory serves me correct. But it came in line. And now the one aspect of the data that came out is personal income, which was above expectations. In fact, personal income came up a full 1 percentage point. And so that was a little bit of a surprise. And it's a good surprise. It means more people are having more income in their pocket. And as far as the PCE is concerned, it was in line with expectations. And what's interesting, Joe, is when you look at the year-over-year PCE. Now, for any listeners that have not heard this on the show, the personal consumption expenditure used to be the data point, that the Federal Reserve would look at and examine to determine their interest rate policy. And over the last few years, they've moved away from it and have been really focusing more on the Consumer Price Index, or CPI. But if the Fed, Joe, was just looking at the PCE that came out this past week, was in line with expectations, up 0.3% month over month. But looking at the year over year, that's the one that makes you kind of go, because the year over year PCE came in at 2.85%. That is the lowest PCE number since March of 2021. But here's the kicker. It's lower than the long-term average. The long-term average for the PCE is 3.24%. So not to bore everyone to tears with all these numbers and statistics, what it's telling me is that the Fed should be much closer if they're just looking at the PCE. If they were just focusing on that, then we are closer to the Federal Reserve needing to cut interest rates, because it's below the long-term average. And we're only 0.8% away from their quote unquote magic target of 2%. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But the market definitely responded on the other side of the PCE number when we saw a nice rally on Thursday and a nice rally on Friday. And in fact, Joe, during commercial break, I was looking at volume in the S&P 500. Thursday and Friday had the highest buy volume above the daily moving average this year. So the big conversation we've been having on this show is how much longer. We've had now 4 straight months, really since October of last year, of the market rallying and going higher. And as we said on last weekend's show, we were feeling that there's warning signs flashing, and to just be, you know, careful in and around here. And Joe, you made a very great point on last week's show that if you're looking to commit more money to stocks, you definitely need to be dollar cost averaging in over time. Little buys incrementally, week over week, month over month, because we've had such a run. But when I see this kind of buy volume, it's telling me that this rally might continue to still have some legs.
And I wanted to point something out. I was reading an article earlier on Friday on CNBC Pro, and I subscribe to that. And if you're a listener, you know, have at it. You know, but Kyle and I get a lot of our data from CNBC Market Watch. There's a lot of different services out there. And one of the headline of this article is, these are the most overbought stocks with the market at a record high, including General Electric. Well, looking at this, and they take RSI, which is Relative Strength Index. That's one of the things that Kyle looks at when he's doing some research on stocks. Above 70 means it's overbought. Out of all of these stocks that they listed, and there are about 10 of them or so, okay, not one of them was a member of the Magnificent Seven. And Kyle and I, before we came on the show, were talking about, is the Magnificent Seven overbought? Is it or is it not? And with especially the incredible run that NVIDIA is having. And then one of the stocks in there is one of Jeff's favorite stocks, General Electric, which was in there. And I was we talked a little bit about it, you know, I think last week.
We do not own.
Yeah, General Electric, we do not own that. We do not own, actually, any of these stocks that, according to CNBC's RSI rating. And they look at a 14-day average, and they take a score of 70. None of the stocks that we own actually were in that. And I'm not really shocked to see that, but that's something that Kyle and I are constantly talking about, and Jeff, every day, is what in the portfolio is overvalued. So,
well, and that's something, Well, and that's something, you know, I just spent going back to President's Day, starting on President's Day, more than a week of just revetting every stock in our portfolio and identifying about eight potentially overvalued candidates based on a proprietary grading and scoring system that we use at the office. And some of those names are on the sell list. We've had nice big run-ups in them. We've had nice long-term capital gains in these positions, and I've identified five other stocks to replace that have a lot more potential legs under them and room for them to run. But talking about the Magnificent Seven, Joe, I mean, Apple and Google are negative year to date. I mean, they've been getting no love. Now, but for our listeners that haven't heard this, you know, one of the big pieces of news from Apple that came out this past week is that they're dropping their EV car and their the autonomous systems that they were developing, and they're going to lay some folks off, unfortunately, but then they're also going to redeploy some of those folks to be focusing and working on their AI system. Now, I can tell you this. Apple has been kind of unloved the last several months, and their potential earnings growth and profit growth, they're talking about low single-digit growth because we have not seen the new cycle of buying for iPhones. You know, people are not going out and getting a brand new iPhone for every single phone they release. But this past week, I heard a money manager who gave Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, a great piece of advice. He said, create your own AI system, build it into the new iPhone that then cannot be loaded into the older generations of the iPhones, and then you will see a huge surge of sales, especially if you make the AI system very cool, where you ask Siri, hey Siri, book me a restaurant at this time on this date in this general area, and I want this kind of food, and she figures it out and takes care of all of it. That's something that if they wind up creating and perfecting and getting more focused on artificial intelligence and how it could be beneficial for the company moving forward, I think right now Apple could potentially be a good buy for a long-term hold, especially the lack of love that it's not been receiving from Wall Street.
And one of the things you have to be is very diligent when you're talking about individual stocks, because Apple's one of those stocks like, okay, what kind of run are we at Apple? What kind of growth we have? And then they come out talking about essentially an Apple AI phone, right? And then we're looking at a correlation with Meta. So you're talking about EV and Apple and how they're saying, you know what, we're not going that route. We'll look at Meta and what they're
doing. The metaverse.
With the metaverse, all right? All of a sudden they changed a little bit. They ran the business like a business, cut some employees, and they modify a little bit and look at the tear that Meta's been on now. But these
not saying
mega caps always try to reinvent themselves, or you know.
That's the one thing, you know, talking about companies wanting to reinvent themselves, and that's true. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg going down that path of the metaverse several years ago, realizing it was a multi-billion-dollar giant waste of time, wasn't accepted by the public, and there was really no need for it or use for it, realizing it, cutting staff, redeploying staff, and focusing into the AI sphere. And obviously, like you said, Joe, we've seen, you know, Meta on a tear going back to last year, because it was at a great value. Now, with Apple, I'm not exactly saying right now it's a huge value, but the lack of love that it's been getting, and now the fact that they're redeploying their assets and their research and development, because let's think about it. Apple has some of the best tech people in the world, all around the world. And if they're going to now focus their attention on building out an AI system, potentially exclusively for their new phones, I think they're going to get it figured out. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight. So that's why I'm saying we're long-term buy and holders at Davidson Capital Management. But for a stock that's down so far this year, it's part of the Magnificent Seven. It's a top holding in a lot of large cap growth funds around this world, you know, around the world for money managers. It wouldn't necessarily be a bad pickup to have. And it's, you know, Apple is a position in our portfolio, for full disclosure. We've owned it for a very, very long time. And it's definitely a position that I would be interested in adding more to it. Maybe not at right at this particular point, but somewhere in the future. Well, with that, let's take another commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. You Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us at our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So you're just tuning in this weekend show, recapping Wall Street from this past week, you know, kind of getting a little bit into the technical weeds. You know, I got to be honest, I was quite surprised to see such strong volume numbers on the S&P 500 on the buy side Thursday and Friday. I mean, Thursday, 35% buy above the daily moving average. On Friday, 23%, highest buy volume above the daily moving average all year. So as we were saying in the last segment, you know, this rally could definitely still have some room to run. But, you know, in the financial entertainment press, they're going to always be bringing out the bullish people. They're going to be bringing out the bearish people. And, of course, always talking about valuations. And not to get too deep in the technical weeds, I read an interesting story this past week on MarketWatch where they were comparing the last 4 months of run that we've had going back to 2023 in the markets, the S&P in particular, and the NASDAQ, and comparing it back to the dot-com era, back in 98, 99, running up into 2000 until we had the dot-com bubble burst, and comparing valuations of a lot of these tech names that ran up back then, 20-plus years ago, to today. But what they found through crunching all their numbers is that today tech stocks and these Magnificent Seven, from a valuation standpoint, are about half or 50% the valuation of where these high-flying tech names were back during the dot-com era. So the whole gist of the article is that we definitely can have more room to run here, and things aren't as overvalued as they seem when you compare it to the meteoric and historic run-ups as we had that we had in the late 90s. Yeah, Joe.
Well, I wanted to point something out. You're bringing me back to a time when I worked for another firm that will remain nameless, and when the dot-com era came out, and I talked about it probably a month ago, and every other month there was a new IPO. But every other month they're also, and the exchange-traded funds were not even coming out yet. But every other month there was a new momentum-based mutual fund based on the tech sector, all right? And either the 20 or 40 best tech ideas that we had, or a telecommunications fund, or unit investment trust that was capitalizing off the momentum and kind of the froth that we saw during that period of time. This doesn't feel anything like that, in my opinion. And I remember
point.
This firm, we'd have a list of proprietary funds and who sold how much, and you wanted to be on that list, but at the same token, you're sitting there going, all right, you know, knowing what I know now, what will we have done? We're not seeing that momentum. We're not seeing, and we get hit up by investment companies all the time to sell their products, and we don't take those calls, but
not to sell them, but to buy them.
Yeah, but we're
not to sell the products, to buy the products.
To buy them, exactly.
For our clients.
We're not seeing that like we did in the tech sector and the tech bubble.
The dot-com era. Well, and you also brought up a point about IPOs. You know, that's something that we're not seeing a whole lot of and haven't really since the end of 2022. We're not seeing too terribly many IPOs. Like back in the dot-com era, you know, there was a new IPO coming out every week. You know, two guys in their garage become billionaires overnight on paper because they started a company that says dot-com at the end of it, but they don't have a product. You know, they don't have a service. You know, that's different in this day and age. You know, when you're talking about Broadcom, it's been around forever. They make great products. NVIDIA, same thing. Apple. Everyone listening to the show knows who Apple is. You know, these aren't no-name companies that are launching their IPO, and they now have a market cap of $50, $60, $70 billion. That's just not happening. You know, remember several years ago, Joe, the SPACs, the special acquisition companies? Those dried up. And so we're not seeing, like you said, we're not seeing that momentum of capitalization of companies coming out in the tech space or the AI space that's trying to do the way things were done back in the late 90s. So that is a very interesting point that you brought up, and it's really something for all investors to think about. But I'm still going to go back to what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks on this program, that if you do find your portfolio with lighter exposure to stocks than you would like, and higher cash positions, higher money market positions, that if you're wanting to start moving some of that money into the stock market, do it very, very slow, do it very slowly, and very methodically, and do it over a lengthy period of time. Because when I look at all the technical charts, it is telling me that we are due for a pullback. Now, those pullbacks more than likely are going to be used as buying opportunities for those investors, whether it be professional or at or home gamers, to get more exposure to the stock market. But, you know, I'm trying to think, Joe, right here on the air, what would be the bit of news? And I know you and I talked about this past week in one of our portfolio strategy skull sessions. What would be the tipping point to create a 10% corrective move in the market? You know, what would be that piece of news? Because I think that the market now has pretty much got it set in their head. We're not going to see 6 to 7 interest rate cuts by the Fed. We're not.
It's digested that, yes.
And they correct. And I think the market, you're exactly right. The market has digested that. You know, maybe outside, barring a geopolitical event that no one can plan and prepare for other than just being reactive to it and having a proper allocation and proper security selection, you know, really doing your homework. I really don't know what that catalyst would be. You know, other than possible buying exhaustion, but based on the pie volume I saw Thursday and Friday, I don't think the market has gotten to a buying exhaustion yet.
Well, I think when you couple with the PCE numbers that came out, I mean, you look at CPI, the last CPI run was a little hot. You look at PCE coming in line where it needed to be, and we're not going to talk about the Fed, okay? We've talked about the Fed a lot on this show. But we're just trying to see what would be the catalyst for that 10% correction. It could be second quarter earnings surprises on the downside. That could be, but I just don't see that. You look at GDP, there's a slight revision to GDP, but GDP is pretty strong.
But it's still 3.1%.
Yeah, geopolitical is the only thing I can actually think of. But that doesn't mean there can't be something out there. And there's certain types of ways you build a portfolio. And geopolitical risk is one of the toughest things to hedge against, you know. I mean, it's extremely difficult to do that. But your first line of defense, like we always talk about, is having an asset allocation strategy. That's your first line of defense. And averaging into that allocation strategy built by Superior Investments, which, like Cramer always says, and I know Kyle puts a ton of effort into, is do your work. If you're going to buy individual stocks, do your work. I can't tell you how many times I go down the hall and Kyle is sweating profusely, just kidding, looking through a myriad of stocks through his screener, figuring out what can we do better in the portfolio to give our clients a better chance at return. And also from the exchange-traded fund section, what are the best ETFs we could buy and how can we put them together to create that allocation model, but secondarily have the right investments in there. So
well, and I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, first line of defense is asset allocation. Security selection is right there in line with that. But then you also have to have the active management. Mm-hmm. You know, why is the legacy distribution system, all the brokerage sales companies, you know, in the world of finance, why have they gone to this computer algorithm modeling and using nothing, pretty much exclusively using a lot of exchange traded funds? Because it's less work. It's less human capital being invested at building a superior portfolio and then actively making adjustments to it throughout the year as market conditions and economic conditions change. It costs too much money for them. It's all about their bottom line. You know, that's the reason why these companies have always have moved over the last, you know, decade plus to this passive strategy. There's very few companies. Hold on. Let me finish and I'll let you hit on that. There's very few firms, very few companies left in this world that do it the way that we do it at Davidson Capital Management. Old school, putting in the work, putting in the man hours, you know, working when other people are off or on the golf course. We're in our offices working and trying to build a superior portfolio to give superior returns to our clients, but then actively managing it and making adjustments when adjustments need to be made based on real-time market conditions. You know, that's why we're hired. It just takes a lot of work and a lot of human capital in order to do that. But that's what our job is. And unfortunately, there's fewer and fewer people in the financial service industry that do it the way that we do it.
It's pretty simple. I know we're coming up at the end of the segment. You could send your information to us and we do a portfolio review, but you could do your own portfolio review. Take a look at last year's statements. Look at all of your quarterly statements, all your monthly statements. If you have the same allocations and they're tweaking it on a quarterly basis, meaning they're buying something a little bit lower and selling something a little bit higher, and they're doing it on a timing basis, meaning every quarter or every month, that's really not active money management. That's just rebalancing your portfolios on a set schedule. And I guarantee you're going to have a certain amount of international in there and a certain amount of high yield. You know.
Well, how about this, Joe? How about if you continue to see the same names again and again and again, year after year after year after year, and there's no explanation from your advisor as to why they're continuing to own them, especially if they don't have superior returns, why are they continuing to be in the portfolio? So those are the questions that you have to ask. Well, with that, let's take another commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. You Money Wise guys, I'll be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll-free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So in our last segment of the first hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program, I want to kind of carry, Joe, what we were talking about in the last segment. You know, as you were saying, you can do your own portfolio review and analysis just to start to see if you're just sitting in the same investments year after year after year with no adjustments, no changes, a periodic rebalance. That's not active money management. But I wanted to shift gears a little bit because, of course, you know, part of our company at Davidson Capital Management is we manage and oversee corporate retirement plans, 401ks. You are the director of our corporate retirement plan division. And, you know, one thing that we've been running into here recently is we work with several large refineries in the Corpus Christi area. And here recently, a company that we've been working with for, 17, 18 years now, and a lot of their employees, pre-retirees and retirees, we know that they have moved to a new 401k platform. They've moved to a Fidelity platform. And the thing that we've been hearing a lot here recently is that the Fidelity reps are just absolutely hounding the employees that are of a certain age, of a certain dollar amount in the 401k, trying to push their quote-unquote managed strategies to the employees. Now we see, Fidelity is not alone in doing this. A lot of all the big 401k providers do this where they're kind of trying to sell their managed programs inside the 401k.
Usually they don't have an advisor overseeing the entire plan. These are individual advisors at Fidelity that Kyle's talking about, not the advisor of a plan. These big, humongous plans, typically, they don't have somebody like us monitoring the investments for them, because we usually would, or the platform, we would not allow that to happen. So I just wanted to
Correct.
Because in our 401ks, you're every single quarter vetting every single investment option being offered to the employees to ensure that we're offering the best of breed investment options in the 401k. And so we select and deselect the menu of investment options the 401k plan participant can select from. But as you were saying, Joe, in these big multi-billion dollar size 401ks, they're not overseen by a money manager. They're not overseen by a Davidson Capital Management that's vetting the investment options being offered. And the one thing that Fidelity does, and again, this happens with whether it's a Vanguard or a T. Rowe Price 401k plan, these big corporate 401k providers, is they backfill majority, if not all of the investment options with their own proprietary funds. Meaning in a Fidelity 401k, you pretty much have to select amongst Fidelity investment options. And so, of course, that always, as active money managers we are, with no affiliations, no proprietary relationships, we're always searching for the best of breed. Is the 401k plan participant truly being given objective investment options and best of breed investment options? And I'm going to come out right now and say, no, they're not. You know, there is an incentive for Fidelity to fill their 401ks with all their Fidelity mutual funds to make more money, to make more fees off the participants in the 401k. But going back to these quote-unquote managed strategies and these individual these individuals at Fidelity, you know, they're quote-unquote advisors, which are typically people in a call center, no telling how many years of experience they have in the industry, licensed to sell. They're not actual money managers. And what they do is they get plan participants to sign up for their quote-unquote managed program for a half of 1% or maybe three-quarters of 1% management fee. They have you fill out a questionnaire, which will create your risk tolerance, and a lot of it's based on your age and your personal aversion to risk. They'll take that questionnaire, stick it into their computer, then the computer's going to spit out a portfolio that's based on a Monte Carlo theory, and tell you, well, based on this age and risk tolerance, you need to have 27% in a large cap growth fund. And guess what? In this particular instance, guess what Fidelity's going to do? They're going to put you in their Fidelity large cap growth fund. Now, is that Fidelity growth fund the best growth fund in that asset class from all the different growth funds available in this country? Maybe, maybe not. But that's maybe a question you should have. And so as far as the active management, there is no active management. They're going to put you in a computer algorithm-based portfolio filled with their funds, and they're going to portray that they're actively managing your portfolio, but they really aren't. It's a passive strategy. And they're going to charge you a management fee on top of that and then double dip on those fees by then putting nothing but their own mutual funds in the plan.
The thing they won't tell you is if you're in a certain plan like a Fidelity, you say, you know what? I want to take a look at a couple of Vanguard target date funds or Vanguard index funds. What would that do? Well, there's a cost to doing that. Usually there's a pretty large transaction fee for just flipping
if they allow
out
it at all.
Exactly right.
If they allow it at all, Joe.
Yeah, and it's just the nature of the beast of the business. But to Kyle's point, you're not getting best of breed. And some of these companies, actually, not particularly Fidelity, but they are focusing more on the advisor and these advisors coming in and some of these cross sells than what they're actually the revenue that they're making on the plan itself. So that might be the next thing that's happening. So
well, and the other thing is, as we've heard, is that they like to gather up a certain age group within a certain corporation, send them to a pre-retirement or retirement planning meeting, and portray that this is your only option in your 401k. You have to do this kind of thing. And when you retire, you have to roll your money over to us. Well, I'm here to tell every single person listening to this show, if you are participating in a 401k and you're over the age of 59 and a half, you have total control on doing what's called an in-service distribution to roll your assets out of your 401k while you're still working and while you're still participating in the plan, and you can roll it out to any money manager of your choosing. It does not have to be with your 401k provider. In fact, we have been working for years. We have been working with employees of a lot of different corporations in the Corpus Christi area for years and years with them taking an in-service distribution and us actively managing, looking for the best of breed investment options and truly actively managing those assets, and them being the participant in the 401k, having a relationship, a personal relationship with an actual money management team. Because within these programs offered in the 401k, there's no telling who you're going to talk to anytime you pick up the phone and call. And they're definitely not active money managers. They are not licensed to legally manage money as we are at Davidson Capital Management. So I just want to make that very clear before we go to the top of the hour break. If you're a participant in a 401k over the age of 59 and a half, you can hire your own money manager, do an in-service rollover distribution, and still participate in your 401k while you're still working towards your retirement. If you'd like to know more, you give us a call, 800-275-2162. With that, we're coming up at the top of our break, so we're going to take the break, go into the news. When we come back, we'll be diving into the second hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program and continuing with more investor education. Stay tuned. We'll do that after this. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. You MoneyWise guys, be back after the news.
All opinions expressed by Davidson Capital Management on MoneyWise are solely theirs and are based upon information they consider reliable and is subject to change without notice. You should be aware of the risk in investing in any security or investment strategy discussed on the show. Before acting, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and should seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
Welcome back. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. We've got my father, John, my brother, Jeff, and I am your host, Kyle Davidson, and we are diving in to the second hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program. Now, if you'd like to learn more about us, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com, or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday, you can reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you have an investment related question or topic you'd like for us to discuss here on the MoneyWise program, you can send all your emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com.
If you missed the first hour of MoneyWise, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Click on the radio show link where you can listen to today's show as well as past MoneyWise programs. And you can also subscribe to our iTunes feed by clicking on the blue note in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage at davidsoncap.com.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
Well, as we like to do in most of the second hours of every weekend's MoneyWise program is going to investor education. And there was a great quiz that came out in the Wall Street Journal that I think it's fantastic for investor education. I think it's a great way to really get all of our listeners to be thinking about their retirement if they're planning, and of course everyone's working towards retirement or is possibly currently in retirement. And so, Jeff, I know you and I wanted to focus a lot of this second hour going into this quiz because I think it's just chocked full of a lot of great information. And, you know, as we get started, you know, what if before you retired you had to pass a test first, kind of like a driver's test, you know, something that gauges how much you know about savings targets, medical bills, estate planning, and a few other fundamental issues?
Because I guess it's kind of like getting your high school diploma. Maybe we call this is the way you get your retirement diploma, is you have to get at least a passing grade. And we'll go with 75%. 75% is passing grade on this quiz. So I think we just kick it off with question number one. Now, research by Fidelity Investments recommends that workers should aim to save what multiple of their ending annual salary at age 67 in order to meet basic income needs in retirement? Now, this question has been, we've heard so many different, is it four times, is it five times, is it 10 times? Now, in this quiz, we have four potential answers to that question. A is four times salary, B is six times the salary, C is eight times the salary, or D, 10 times your annual salary at age 67 in order to meet basic income needs in retirement.
And the answer to that question is answer C. Eight times your current salary. Now, the math is based in part on a worker beginning to save at age 25 and living to 92 years old. So a household with an annual income of $100,000 will need a minimum of $800,000 to meet basic income needs in retirement. But there is a big but here.
There's always a catch.
This is the catch. This is a conservative estimate according to the National Institute on Retirement Security. By contrast, though, Aon Hewitt, which is a human resource consulting firm, estimated that 11 times salary is needed at age 65. So in that same example, you would need $1.1 million in order to meet your basic income needs if you were to retire at age 67.
These numbers to me, I must say, and I know you guys deal with it more on a day-to-day basis, but these numbers are pretty absurd, large, honestly. $800,000.
Well,
think about $800,000.
Yeah.
Now, remember, when we started working, and I'm from this group, we thought you were doing well if you made $10,000 a year back in the late 60s.
It's called inflation, Papa-san.
I know that, but when you see this number, $800,000, I don't know what the percentage would be of people that actually would have saved this for my generation, but it's got to be a lot smaller than what these numbers show in the survey. And so I guess what I'm saying is I wish sometimes we wouldn't throw a number out quite that. I mean, that's just a absurdly intimidating number.
Well, remember, the part of this quiz is to set goals for oneself, and that's one of the biggest problems that Americans face and pre-retirees face in this day and age is paying themselves first and preparing for retirement. That's why quizzes like this, that's why we do these educational hours on the MoneyWise program like we do, is to get people to start thinking in terms of their retirement, and have I saved enough? Am I doing enough towards my retirement? And if I'm not, I need to really get on the ball. But don't think that if you're age 55 and you've saved very, very little, that your retirement's completely shot. I mean, again, you have to get on it.
I'm going to have to somewhat agree with Dad, and I'm going to just throw out a couple of examples. Our grandparents didn't have $800,000 when they retired, and they lived.
Actually, my grandfather probably did have $800,000.
But I'm thinking about your parents,
yes,
mom's parents. I'm talking about
true.
Here in the last 25 years.
Yes, no, that's true.
And they had a great retirement. I think what Dad and I are kind of maybe headed in the direction here, Kyle, is.
I think this number scares people.
Well, and it does. It is a scary number.
It is used to scare people to get them to think about their
retirement. But we've also seen a movement from the legacy distribution system, the financial legacy distribution system, to say that investors should use a maximum withdrawal rate of, what, only 4% per year? And we think that that's awfully low. And we think the reason they set it at 4% is, one, so that they could continue to collect their high fees and expenses, and two, to keep the bar as low as possible, to keep as much money in their care and control, if you will, so they could keep their high fees and expenses. And maybe this is another way of saying, okay, we get people to save more money by putting this kind of information out so that we can again collect more fees and expenses from folks.
Okay. So question number two, a popular rule of thumb states that retirees will need 70 to 80% of their pre-retirement income in later life. Some of the best research into replacement ratios by Aon Hewitt and Georgia State University have found that a good benchmark is A, 65%, B, 75%, C, 85%, or D, 95%. Now the answer is C, 85%. This is one case where the rule of thumb isn't far off the mark. In its own study of replacement ratios, the Social Security Administration has noted that households typically need less income later in life because income taxes are lower, people no longer need to save for retirement, and work-related expenses are reduced or completely eliminated. That said, the best way to identify one's replacement ratio is to draw up a detailed budget for later life, unfortunately. Well, with that, we're going to take another commercial break. When we come back, we'll be continuing this quiz, think you're ready to retire, and we'll do that after this. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about us, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com, or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or receive a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And all emails can be sent to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So before we went to the last commercial break, I was on question number two of the quiz. Kind of what is the rule of thumb of how much income you need to replace in retirement? And the answer was 85% of your current income would need to be replaced in retirement. Dad, I know that there was something you wanted to add to that figure.
Well, again, I think this number is too high. I think it's a scary number. And, when they throw out these big numbers like this, I don't know that this motivates people. It's almost like people throw their hands up.
Because you think it's too overwhelming?
It's just too overwhelming. Now, this would be different if we did a quiz for 28-year-old people after they've been out in the world. I mean,
I agree.
This is who should be taking the quiz.
So in high school, maybe in a high school finance class, which unfortunately they don't teach in high school anymore, personal finance class, or teach it freshman finance basics 101 should be a prerequisite course that you have to take as part of your general studies in your first 2 years in college. Right. This would be a great quiz to take.
Let's flash back. I'm in the I'm right in front of the baby boomers. So when I get into the corporate world there in the late 60s and get into it heavy in the 70s, we have a pension plan. I'm not contributing to this pension plan.
The old defined benefit
plan. And I'm going to have this pension plan at age 65. And every year I get a statement showing me what it is. But the problem was every 2 or 3 years I'm changing jobs. And so I end up with no retirement until we finally come out with a 401k. Mm-hmm. And so now we do have a situation where young people can carry this 401k with them
Wherever they go.
But
they have to participate.
But they have to participate. And so what I'm saying is some of this throwing out these big numbers, I fear that most of the people, the baby boomers, are the first 10 years of the baby boomers, they're done. They were in these same plans. They didn't start their 401ks until the 80s. There's no way in the world they've got these kind of numbers. They just aren't going to have these kind of numbers.
Not the majority of the people.
It's almost as if these first two questions are assuming that the retirees have kids that are still teenagers and haven't gone to college yet, and they just bought their house 2 years before, and they have 28 years left on their mortgage, and they got two brand new cars in the garage. In the real world, most of the people who had, when they retire, their kids are out of college, their house is probably paid off or nearly paid off, and they have two cars in the garage that are paid for. And the reason I say is because we see these folks every day. Mm-hmm. And the typical retiree or person that's getting ready to retire comes to us and says, oh, my house is paid off, my cars are paid off, my kids are out of school. No credit card debt.
And they've prepared properly. They took the proper steps of paying themselves first. But usually, Dad, these folks that we see have the combination of the traditional pension, like you're talking about, and the 401k. Now, and what's typical is that the pension's usually about half of their retirement savings, and then the 401k is the second part.
So
is
it bad to want to overshoot, to have $1 million retirement?
No.
Is it bad to want to have 70 or 80% of your current income in retirement going 20 years? No. Why not overestimate and shoot for the stars? Because if you come up a little bit short, you'll still be most likely okay.
But with all this said, again, if you are in your 50s, early 50s, mid-50s, and you haven't saved that much, we're not telling you to stop saving for retirement.
No.
We're saying that you need to hit the pedal to the metal and save as much as you possibly can. But also, like Jeff was saying, focus on your consumer debts. Focus on
reducing
car loans,
expenses.
Reducing expenses. Because, see, that's another key to having a more comfortable retirement is by lowering your overhead. And the lower your overhead and the more money you've saved and the cheaper your cost of living is, the further your money's going to last.
And one other thing that was in here that I hear you talk about all the time to people thinking about retirement is getting this budget, sitting down with your spouse or your significant other and setting these budgets out and seeing really what are you going to need.
And again, nobody really knows what they're going to need 15 years from now. But I always say take like the last 6, maybe 8 months and average it and just see what you're spending. But I think also it's an exercise of opening your eyes up to how much you actually are spending, because I think, Dad, some folks don't really pay that much attention. You know, I can tell you I budget with my wife like a maniac. I am a budget maniac, and I'm constantly on top of what my free cash flow is, what money's coming in and out of the door, keeping track of all of that to the penny, and I've been blessed to have a wife that does it exactly the way that I do it. And so it makes our house a very happy home because we never have to argue about budgets or money ever, which is nice. So
question number three.
Jeff.
What percentage of surveyed workers aged 55 and above said they or their spouse have tried to calculate how much they will need to save to live comfortably in retirement? A, 34%, B, 44%, C, 54%, or D, 64%. And the correct answer is C. Only about half of workers approaching retirement have done a savings needs calculation, according to the Employee Benefit Research Institute. One encouraging development is that that figure from January of the beginning of the year is up 42%, it was up from 42% in 2003. So the good news is that more people are taking the bull by the horns, if you will, and sitting down and doing this savings need calculation.
Well, I just think that, again, this is something that everyone can do, and I hope that we're part of getting that number up.
Absolutely, and as we've said on this show, previous shows, as many years as we've been doing it, is there's a ton of free calculators online, a ton for you to be able to project, you know, what potential retirement income you need. Am I saving enough right now based on what I've currently saved and what expenses I have? Utilize the internet for all of these free calculators. I found a website, I wish I had it written down, that has a gazillion free calculators, and you can spend all day having fun with calculations, and the computer program does everything for you, and it's free of charge.
I also, one other thing I didn't say, I think the 92 is really a ridiculously high number.
As far as living?
Yes. I don't think
look at the actuarial charts, though, Dad, right now, someone age 65, they have a better than 50% chance to live well into their 80s.
Yeah. That,
with modern advances in medicine. So you can disagree with it, but
I totally disagree. I think that, I mean, there is very few people are going to live to be 92. Very, very few.
I would disagree with you on that, but that's what makes this show so fun. So question number four, among workers age 55 plus, what percentage think they need to save $250,000 or more for retirement, and what percentage have already saved that amount or more? And the answer is 54%, about half of the 55-plus demographic thinks a nest egg of at least $250,000, not including the value of their home or any pension, is needed later in life, according to the Employee Benefit Research Institute. But unfortunately, fewer than one in four, or less than 25%, have reached that goal. More sobering still is 36% of this age group report having saved less than $10,000.
So here's where I'm coming from. We throw out a number of 800,000 in question number one. We come back here on question number four, and we're saying,
but that's 800,000 based on $100,000 household income, Dad. So if you make $50,000,
granted, 400,000. But what I'm saying here is, we can't even get more than one in four people to have $250,000.
I know. That's why we're doing this survey, to really get people to start thinking. And it's kind of a, not, I don't want to say scare tactic, but it kind of is to wake people up that maybe are not on that savings bandwagon.
Well, see, $250,000 sounds like a lot of money until you think you're going to live 18 years plus past the age of 65. All of a sudden, you put 20 years into $250,000.
That's not a lot of money.
That's about $12,500 a year. Yeah. That's not. That's, you're not going to be on
it's
any
a grand
needs.
A month.
Yeah, that's not going to get you anywhere. So that's why when we're talking these numbers, this is the more sobering number to me. I mean, see, the 800 number just goes over my head. What I want to focus on, and what our listeners will focus on, is a lot of people think $250,000 is a lot of money for retirement. It's not.
Not if you live 15, 20 years in
it
retirement.
It is not. And yet, it is $250,000, which ain't hay.
It's not.
And so you've got to think in terms of the budget. You got to think in terms of your how many years you think you're going to live. You got to watch your actuarials and see where they are, and you have to plan accordingly. You think people are going to live to be in their 90s.
No. They're statistically. I mean, these are statistics I'm spouting.
I'm just saying 250 is woefully short if you're living to be 92.
No, that's absolutely true.
And only one in four have got that number.
And what's even worse, though, is this is 36% of age 55 plus. 36% of this group have reported to have saved less than $10,000. Now, that is a sobering statistic. Well, we're coming to the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take the break, go on to the news. When we come back, we'll be continuing So You Think You're Ready to Retire quiz, and we'll do that after this. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Money Wise guys will be back after the news. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday, you could reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So we're continuing the quiz that came out of the Wall Street Journal. Think You're Ready to Retire. That's the title of the article in the quiz. And we've gotten to question number five. Now, question number five is, what is the average age at which current retirees say they actually retired? And what is the expected retirement age of current workers? Now, the answer, according to the Gallup poll published in May, found that the average retiree stopped working at age 61, and that's up from 57 in 1993, and the average worker currently expects to retire at age 66, up from age 60 in 1995. Giving your nest egg a boost isn't the only benefit from delaying retirement. Gallup also found that individuals age 60 to 69 who work have slightly better emotional health than those who don't work.
I think since 2008, I have been making the statement that I thought that one of the reasons why the unemployment rate seems to be staying at a higher level than it might have been in recoveries past, if you will, is because of this, is because of the average worker working longer.
I like the way that you put it, like a domino effect. Domino hasn't fallen off.
I think he's right on it. I think he's
because,
right on.
Because if
here.
if we've got 36% of the 55 plus age demographic that have saved less than $10,000 for retirement, how can they actually retire? The answer is that they can't.
Unless they can live strictly off of Social Security.
Well, and you can't start taking Social Security. You're 62, and you're saying the number right now is 61.
And for me, it's 65.
Well, what was amazing, though, I think in this last question, though, is that the average age of current retirees, they stopped at 61.
They retired before they could get Social Security.
And now workers are currently thinking about age 66. I mean, I
think it would be after the majority of them start being able to collect.
And here's something else that's interesting about this statistic. Remember now that the people that are in and around my age didn't get a 401k until the 80s. So they worked 10, 12, 14 years before a 401k even existed.
That's true.
And really, the IRAs had not been around that long. And so what you're seeing here is that the people who have actually retired are those few people that stayed with a corporation, did not job switch, and the corporation exists. You know, in my case, almost every, you know, corporation I work for is no longer in business.
And their pensions had to get turned over to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, and those folks have enough unfunded liabilities to handle strictly from the airline industry alone.
So I find it interesting that, my age group that's retired, they said that they retired at age 61. So that tells me that they were a government worker, they were in the military, they had some type of public service, or they were fortunate enough to have worked for a corporation that stayed in business, and they didn't job switch.
Number six, what percentage of surveyed workers say they plan to continue working for pay in later life, and what percentage of current retirees say they have worked for pay? Now, the answer to that is it's among the biggest disconnects in retirement planning. The large number of current workers who anticipate earning a paycheck in later life and the relatively small percentage of retirees who actually have done so, 69% plan to work in retirement, while 25% have worked for say they have worked for pay in retirement.
So I mean that when 69% are planning to work in retirement, but in actuality only 25% do. So if you think, well, I haven't done a great job saving for my retirement, when I finally retire, I'll go get a part-time side job and earn money that way. Well, this survey has found out that a lot of people plan to do that, but very few actually go out and do it.
Number seven, what percentage of U.S. households are at risk of not having enough savings to maintain their living standards in retirement? Now, A, 33%, B, 43%. C, 53%, or D, 63%. Now, the answer is C, 53%. And that figure has climbed 9 percentage points between 2007 and 2010, according to the National Retirement Risk Index. Now, among the reasons for the increase are the bursting of the housing bubble, falling interest rates, and the gradual increase in Social Security's full retirement age. And the approved, if painful, solution for reducing that risk is save more, reduce expenses, so we're just talking about, reduce and hang expenses on to your current job for as long as possible.
But see, this number is too low. We just said only one in four is saving $250,000. So then, how could
no? Yeah, one in four.
So how could only 53? How is it that 53% have enough savings? That can't be. The number should be 26, 25. This number is not consistent with the other number.
Well, you're going to have to call the National Retirement Risk Index at the Center for Retirement Research and tell them that.
But what I'm saying, these are two separate studies. This is not done by the same people. And what I'm saying here is when you start looking at these different studies,
everyone has different answers.
They got different numbers. And what we see, because we are on the front lines, what we're seeing is that we're seeing the few, we're seeing that one in four that has saved, that has got this money. But you've got this other group that are relying on Social Security, and we can't even get our politicians to discuss fixing it.
That's right. And there's enough.
And now we're
not even going to get into politics.
Now we're embarked on the greatest adventure any of us has seen since Medicare in the 60s, and that's now the Affordable Care Act, which it could be the biggest misnamed act in the history of this country.
You mean it should be called the Unaffordable
Care Act, Health Act. I mean, we don't know. And so we're on this. We're right on the cusp of this new horizon, which is the most important thing for seniors. Now, they tell us as seniors that our Medicare is going to stay the same. Well, excuse me if all of a sudden I'm not concerned, because I heard the president say, if you want to keep your health care, you can. And now we've learned this week that's not true.
Only if your plan was in existence prior to the 2010 deadline. So moving on to question number 8. If you retire at age 65, what percentage of your life can you expect to live in retirement? And, Dad, you kind of alluded to this few segments ago. Yeah. Let me get to the answer. Hold your horses there.
Hold my water.
14%, B, 17%, C, 20%, or D, 23%. And the answer is D, 23%. The average life expectancy for a 65-year-old is 19.1 years, which means the average American will spend close to one quarter of his or her life in retirement. Again, the key as to why you have to save for retirement.
And remember, we now have that giant rat that's gone through the snake that's coming out with the baby boomers that has skewed all of the numbers all my life in every day. How many more are retiring? And we're getting ready to change health care for everyone in the country.
You lost me with the rat through the snake.
I'm saying baby boomers was this giant group of population that skewed schooling. Then it skewed housing.
And it's going to skew Social Security benefits and whatnot.
It's going to skew entitlements. Yep. And what are we doing at the one time we shouldn't be fooling with this? We've just got ourselves into the health care situation. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm saying is that while these guys are up there screwing around with the budget ceilings and everything else, as we talked about on show number one back in November 2005, entitlement tsunami wave continues to approach the Poseidon.
Okay, so question number 9. A 65-year-old couple retires this year in 2013. How much money will they need to cover medical expenses throughout their retirement? A, $100,000. B, $140,000. C, $180,000. Or D, $220,000. Now, this number will probably shock some of our listeners. The answer is D. The figure from Fidelity Investments is actually down 8% from projections in 2012. So you'll need $220,000 to cover medical expenses throughout your retirement. Now, the remaining significantly larger than most. Now, this number is significantly larger than most consumers estimate. And a Fidelity poll of pre-retirees age 55 to 64 found that nearly 48% believe that they will only need $50,000 to pay health care costs in retirement. What's also problematic is that the estimated $220,000 doesn't include the possible cost of over-the-counter medication, most dental services, and long-term care.
See, to me, this is the largest threat to the baby boomers, and they don't even understand
medical costs.
Medical costs.
Health care.
And you guys, from time to time, kind of wade into, you know, what I and your mother have dealt with here for a few years, and that is the cost, current cost of medical care, like a visit to a emergency room and what that can cost.
$200,000? $220,000.
That number is too low. Whatever that number is, I'd believe $800,000 before I'd believe $200,000, because the truth is we don't know what that number is.
Well, and we know that medical costs are spiraling way out of control, and the government is doing nothing to get control of them. With that, we're going to take another commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday, you could reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So in our last segment of this weekend's MoneyWise program, want to wrap up. So you think you're ready to retire quiz from the Wall Street Journal. Getting to question 10, what percentage of participants in defined contribution savings plans, that includes 401ks, contribute the maximum amount allowed each year? A, 5%, B, 15%, C, 25%, or D, 35%. Now, this might be shocking.
This is easy.
Yeah, actually, it might not be shocking, I should say. The answer is A, 5%. Only 1 in 20 savings plan participants contribute the maximum amount allowed annually, which is currently $17,500, according to a survey by the Government Accountability Office. A Vanguard study published in June found that only 11% of participants in Vanguard-administered plans saved the maximum in 2012, and only 15% of those eligible took advantage of the catch-up contribution provision, which is an additional $5,500 you can save on top of $17,500 for anyone over the age of 50.
So, I mean, that's
shockingly low.
Well, we have been on for a long time talking about low participation rates in 401ks.
So you compound low participation with low contribution on top of that.
Yeah, and when you add those two together, then it's very easy to see how we have, what was it, 36% of 55 folks over 55 years of age having reported saving less than $10,000.
That's right. So if you have a 401k plan available to you as an employee, participate.
Question number 11 of the quiz. A household age 65 is living on $120,000 a year, and now at 3% inflation, how much money would that household need at age 75? And at age 85.
And I could answer that question, Jeff. At age 75, with 3% inflation, you would need $161,000. And at age 85, you would need $217,000. And this is a topic that we've talked about on this show time and time again, how many investors are not paying attention to monetary inflation, why they're continuing to accept extremely low returns in this low interest rate environment
by having high allocations to fixed income in their portfolios.
That's right, and that inflation is eroding purchasing power. Let me put it in a simpler way. $5,000 grocery bill today would cost over $9,000 in 20 years. And I used to use also that car example, what your 67 Fastback cost versus what the average cost of a
$3,600.
Yeah, what is the average cost of a Mustang today? Well over $30,000. That's inflation. Question number 12. What percentage of households age 65 through 74 carry housing debt and credit card debt? The answer is 41% carry housing debt and 32% carry credit card debt. Now, this housing figure is from 2010 and is up from 25% in 1992, says the Employee Benefit Research Institute, and the credit card figure is unchanged over that period. The median value of mortgage debt for a household age 65 to 74 in 2010 was $70,000, according to AARP, and that is up from $15,400 in 1989.
Question number 13 from the quiz. What percentage of workers have obtained investment advice from a professional financial advisor who is paid through either fees or commission? Now, the four options we have are A, 13%, B, 23%, C, 33%, or D, 43%. Now, the answer is B. Only 23% of workers have obtained investment advice from a professional financial advisor. And of those, 41% said they followed most of the advice. About a quarter said they followed all of it. The other quarter said they followed some of it.
And if you're not just looking to get advice and actually looking to get professional management, the one thing that we always try to teach on the MoneyWise program is that if you do not want to be making the day-to-day investment decisions on your retirement nest egg, you need to find a competent and experienced registered investment advisor that's completely fee-based, that will be able to take that discretionary control, that will be sitting on that wall to be making the day-to-day decisions with your retirement nest egg. So to summarize from this entire quiz, it's a lot of great information. Hopefully it's information that is a wake-up call for some people. If you're a younger listener to the MoneyWise program, hopefully this provided you some education and maybe motivated you to get on the ball to, as we've always said on this program, to pay yourself first. But if you're in your 50s and you're part of that 36% that have saved less than $10,000, don't think that you're completely hopeless to retire. You have time. You have to start saving. You have to start investing.
Retirement saving is not a race. It's a marathon.
That's right.
And those who have a lot more time to run that marathon are going to be the ones that are, I think, in the end, are going to have a much better retirement and be much more comfortable. Now, that's not to say for those of us that are listening to our show that might be in that 36% that have saved less than $10,000. It's never too late to get started. It's never too late to get motivated. It's never too late to train for that marathon.
I like
time,
that.
Is time on your side? Well, time is what it is. It is what it is, as they say. But that doesn't mean you just give up, sit on your hands, and not at least make the effort to participate in that 401k that you have at work and increase your contributions. Or if you've been we continue to see many investors that have been sitting on the sidelines when it comes to
not participating
in the stock side of the market, not having some of their portfolio invested in stocks, still sitting in cash, still sitting in high allocations to fixed income. It's never too late to start to make a change.
And retirement planning would be extremely easy if all of us were given a piece of paper the day we were born that said the day that we were going to be leaving this earth. Retirement planning would be very, very easy. Unfortunately, none of us know when our last day on this earth is going to be. And so the best thing to do is to be prepared and to plan. That's absolutely the key, and pay yourself first and constantly be thinking about that prize. Kind of like Jeff said, that marathon. There's a finish line at the end of that marathon. It's a long race, but you will eventually get to that finish line. And so you have to prepare and plan for it.
And so if you're not sure where you're at in your marathon, if you think you need to be saving more, if you're not sure what you own in retirement, if you want to get a look at your retirement plan and see if, am I invested in the right securities? Give us a call at Davidson Capital Management. We'll be happy to do a free portfolio review and analysis.
Okay. And you can reach us at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And with that, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to this weekend's Money Wise program. For my father, John, and my brother, Jeff, this is Kyle Davidson saying have a fantastic weekend, and to your financial health, we will talk to you next week.